Today, 9/11, we mark the fifth anniversary of that very tragic day. And 5 years later, why? What happened? Why still so much division? Why so many theories? In a moment, we'll find out about one of them on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to relate a couple stories throughout the evening, too, as it relates to 9/11. Here's one about a 28-year CIA career man and a former skeptic of the alternative 9/11 explanations. He's gone further than ever before in voicing his convictions that the attacks bore the hallmarks of an inside job. He says in three buildings in the WTC complex were brought down by controlled demolition. His name is Bill Christensen. He's a former senior official of the CIA. He was a national intelligence officer and director of the CIA's Office of Regional and Political Analysis before his retirement in 1979. Since then, he has written numerous articles on U.S. foreign policies, and he says most probably destroyed by controlled demolition charges placed in the buildings, concluding that about the Twin Towers and Building 7. That is from a former CIA career man, his opinion. David Hawkins is a full member of the Scholars for the 9/11 Truth. Graduate of Cambridge University, he is the former coordinator of artificial intelligence and geoscience research. He is an inventor in the 1989 of a toolkit for virtual reality prototyping. He is the world authority on the use of applied mathematics. He is in the thermodynamics and conductive logic to analyze violent crimes and identify the weapons, opportunities, and motives of the perpetrators. He has his take, his theories on 9/11. Hello, David. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good evening, George. Thank you for having me on your show.
Now, you would be considered an expert in the fields that you are in, and you've got a novel theory in this particular case. But tell us a little bit about yourself beyond this bio, David.
My background, I worked with a company, a very well-known French company called Schlumberger in the international oil industry. And as you mentioned there, I coordinated artificial intelligence and geoscience research at their Ridgefield Research Center in 1981. And I started to wonder about how human beings, having a lot of field experience about how experts looked at our information and interpreted whether there was oil in the oil field, I tried to understand how they put that all together, and eventually I developed a very powerful computational model and actually built systems that reasoned in ways similar to human beings when they were tracking assets through the Earth or, for that matter, just coming to 9/11. Osama bin Laden, a few weeks after 9/11, he made this extraordinary quotation that I think a lot of people have missed. He said, "We have three independent networks to move al-Qaeda assets around the world, and all the resources of the British and Americans cannot stop us." Now, I consider myself, well, I am British. When I read that in the Time magazine, the hairs on the back of my neck went up because I think in the heat of the moment, Osama bin Laden was speaking very precisely and very accurately about what the strengths and limitations of al-Qaeda were. Basically, I think he was saying, "We can't do very much. We might be able to send a novice pilot who's ready to commit suicide with a few box cutters, but we're not very good at anything in particular. For example, we could take over a plane and crash it somewhere, but we wouldn't necessarily be able to crash it in the U.S. Naval Command Center in the Pentagon." So over the last 5 years, I've been trying to take my background and apply it to identifying the three independent networks that al-Qaeda used. And more particularly, and this has happened over the last 2 weeks, the center that coordinated those three networks and helped pull off the entire plot. So I think those are where my forensic economic skills, if you will, and I guess Osama bin Laden's challenge is to us all. What are the three networks that he used, and how is it coordinated?
And I think what is so important here, David, is because just watching this ABC special over the last couple nights, as they were dramatizing Ramzi Youssef, and as I've also talked with a former ABC reporter, Peter Lentz, who's done a great job tracking that as well, Youssef used to say, "I can take these buildings down, but I need explosives and I need money. Without the money, none of this would have happened, would it?
You're absolutely right. And those three networks, immediately I heard or I saw the quotation for Osama bin Laden, I said, well, what three networks would there be that all the resources of the British and the Americans could stop? So I'm starting to think, well, they're not primarily in the English language. They might be French or Arabic. But what kinds of networks would they be? Well, I think one of them, as you've just implied, would be a financial intelligence network. How do you move the huge amounts of money, and how do you exploit the great opportunity, for example, when the New York stock market closed down for 4 days? The second network, I think, George, would be an electronic intelligence network, characteristic of any major battlefield or military mission where command, control, communications, intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance have to be brought together. And the third, and perhaps the most important network, is the human intelligence network. You can't just place explosives in buildings and fire them off and expect the building to come down in a planned way. As I think you mentioned earlier, there were three towers that came down on September the 11th. One and two, well, that was the spectacular shock stuff. But building number three came down at 5:20 p.m. in its own footprint. But very interestingly, down in the debris pile of Ground Zero, the hot spot scatter of molten steel that was still burning months after 9/11,
right.
From a thermodynamic point of view, and that really talks about the level of disorder, exactly the same kind of thermodynamic signature in building number seven as in buildings one and two. So what I, as an applied mathematician or thermodynamicist, would say is whatever it was brought down seven, and remember that wasn't a plane because no plane ever hit building, must have been added to the impact of the plane and the jet fuel fires to buildings one and two, because there was the same distribution of molten steel in the debris piles.
There was a quote attributed to Larry Silverstein, who is the property owner of the World Trade Center, who got a lot of insurance money, David, because of this. And he was overheard saying, you know, we had to pull it. We had to pull it, basically. And anybody in the demolition business knows that that means bring the building down. And I think that's one of the quotes that has had so many people who believe in an alternative reason for 9/11 have cited as the possibilities in this entire field. Would you agree?
Yes, and that's very interesting because in building number seven, I believe we have the germ of the coordination of the three networks mentioned by Osama bin Laden. Most people believe that Larry Silverstein was the owner of the property. In fact, in buildings towers one and two, what he'd actually done is he had got a mortgage for a 99-year lease from the Port Authority of New Jersey mm-hmm. and New York. And he put in a minority of the money. The bulk of the money that went into Towers 1 and 2 came through a mortgage broker called General Motors Acceptance Corporation, which is a wholly owned subsidiary of General Motors. And sitting behind that, and this is totally fascinating, I think, is, I believe, the world's largest private pension fund, which is the Teachers National Pension Fund, TIAA-CREF, which actually handles the pension fund investments of 3 million members, senior faculty members and college employees right across the United States, including the American University of Beirut and Cairo, and I might come back to that. But quite extraordinary, the owners of the mortgage on building number 7 up to October 2000 was the Teachers National Pension Fund. And they sold it to Blackstone Group, but they retained through their private equity arm an insured interest in building number 7. And when Larry Silverstein said he pulled it, I think what he's really saying is the people who owned the mortgage on building number 7 ordered the firefighters or the demolition experts on the contractor working on that building, a British company called AMEC, they were ordered to pull it in order to collect the insurance. And subsequently, they collected $861 million of insurance, and that was shared amongst the Teachers National Pension Fund Private Equity Group.
Now, for the building to go down, for it to be pulled, for explosives to be placed in it, and let's talk primarily about Building 7, at least for this moment, I mean, they could have done it at that moment. It had to have been there from the get-go.
Well, I am an expert in explosives, and I built a lot of improvised explosive devices during my career in the oil industry, so I know a little of this subject. But I've been thinking long and hard about the alleged demolition of the three towers, because the firefighters, before the aerial of the Motorola analog radios they were equipped with was, I believe, sabotaged, they were calling in and saying, I understand, in the South Tower, we've got two small fires burning. Remember, there's black smoke. It's under control.
Right.
So the demolitions, if that's what they were, from the points of impact or just below the points of impact in towers 1 and 2, was a wave traveling downwards. And that can be contrasted with building number 7, which was a bottom-up demolition. So if they were placing charges, they had to be able to rearrange them very quickly on the fly to get a different pattern of demolition.
All right. Have there ever been any witnesses, David, that said, we saw explosive experts changing things, putting explosives in Building 7 at that time or even before that?
I can actually explain how there would be no witnesses. You see, okay. There were 7 underground levels to each of these buildings, Towers 1, 2, and 7. In Towers 1 and 2, there were elevator shafts that went up to the 78th floor of the Sky Lobby.
All right.
I think what they did, and this is a theory, and I can, if there was more time, I could go in a little more.
Oh, yeah, you're with me all hours,
yeah.
So you've got the time.
Yeah, I think what they did is they put either solid fuel or liquid fuel rocket motors inside the freight elevators at the underground levels. They locked them off from public access, so the public wouldn't have known that these were reserved exclusively for this purpose. And the British company AMEC, this is very interesting, it had a partnership contract with Citigroup for the diesel systems, the diesel fuel lines in building number 7. And another one of its contracts that it was getting on a regular basis from the American government was sabotage vulnerability testing.
That's interesting.
And what that means is, in a, for example, and that is what I believe was happening on 9/11, a continuity of government exercise, a contractor that was able to organize simulated sabotage attacks would be employed to test the ability of New York State or even the American government itself to survive a sabotage attack and transfer administrative and executive and legislative and judicial functions to another order of government to prevent panic in the streets, et cetera, et cetera. And AMEC was North America's leading company in the providing of sabotage vulnerability assessments. And it was doing it for example, for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve of the United States. It was doing it, George, in the Pentagon.
So when do you think these explosives were placed in these buildings?
I think for the continuity of government exercise being staged by NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, under the Partnership for Peace program, they had rigged the buildings and the Pentagon and Logan Airport with different saboteur types. And I'm quoting that phrase, saboteur type, comes from the AMEC website. And I think prior to the Tuesday, overnight probably, they had placed these very high temperature, ultra high temperature rocket engines in the freight elevator shafts, and they had locked off the elevator shafts, and those elevators were controlled from the 23rd floor of building number 7, which was the Mayor's Office for Emergency Management, which is a public-private partnership in which AMEC was involved, and they were setting up various sabotage scenarios to determine whether or not New York State, New York City, could continue with government in the event of these sabotage simulations.
Well, these simulations, did they truly expect to detonate them?
This is the magic.
All right, we'll be back. Let's ask you that question again in just a moment. With our guest this hour, David Hawkins, we'll be back with David and his thoughts in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. David Hawkins is our guest this hour. David, so why in God's name do you put live explosives in these buildings if it was just going to be a sabotage-type test or exercise?
Well, I think all the innocent participants would have believed, quite obviously, that the simulation was nothing more than a simulation. But you can imagine the company, this company AMEC, on the ground, and interestingly enough, Boeing in the air. Insiders of those two companies, or the people who had contracted them to do the sabotage assessment, they would have known if the defenses were stood down sufficiently for them to switch from a real continuity of government exercise with a bogus sabotage attack to a bogus continuity of government exercise and a real sabotage attack. So that's what happened. They discovered that they could get the United States Air Force to stand down on the basis the United States Air Force thought they were playing a war game and they were testing out electronic hijacking technology. And they were able to switch, actually, through the command center in Cheyenne Mountain to a real attack.
Now, when you say they, David, who might they be?
Going back up that food chain, you remember I mentioned earlier that the Teachers Private Equity Group.
Right.
Right. The Teachers is a $380 billion fund. It's the largest private pension fund in the world. In 1989, it was passed into private equity custody. And basically, a small group of people, and they described themselves as 50 prominent individuals, of which I know the names of 28. I don't know the names of the 22. They took the pension fund of the professors and faculty members of America's finest universities, and they moved into what is called alternative investment, which is real estate distressed debt, which is a nice name for loan sharking, and what's called event arbitrage. And that's a bit of a technical phrase, and it's not my area, but I've tried to get my head around it. If, for example, you're not getting sufficient rent to pay the mortgage on building number 7, one way of getting your money back is to insure it, knock it down.
Right.
Okay? Equally, with Towers 1 and 2, the North and South Towers, they weren't full of tenants. They were older buildings. People were moving out to different areas, you know, following the dot-com magic. You can stay at home and click on the machine, etc. So one way of getting your money back on the 99-year lease at $3.2 billion was to insure the hell out of it, knock it over, and collect. Unbelievably, George, they collected a double occurrence.
But to knock it over, you need a real excuse, or you're charged with arson, right?
Exactly. And that's where, my phrase that I've sent to you separately, this manufactured shock. There were three stages to the explosions that destroyed the building. The first one was the visual shock when the planes flew into the buildings and created the fireball, and everyone was extremely impressed. But the mere fact that that fireball went out into the open air means it wasn't available to heat the steel inside the building. So there was actually very little energy left to heat the steel, right? And in the particular case of the South Tower, the flame started burning black smoke, which means not enough oxygen is getting to it. So it's probably around 600 to 700 degrees Fahrenheit. Steel melts at 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. When those towers came down, if you look at the ejection velocity of the girders that are blown out sideways, they're blown out at about 100 miles an hour. Well, George, gravity doesn't do that.
All right. In your theory of a plan to get insurance money,
yep,
where does Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda fit in?
Osama bin Laden, there's a very well-known Canadian. Actually, he's not terribly well-known. A guy called Maurice Strong, who helped set up the UN Oil for Food scam. He's a Canadian guy. He was the senior advisor to the president of the World Bank. And he hates Anglosphere and the America. And he said in 1981, it was for a story he's going to write, the greatest threat to the survival of the planet are the rich industrialized countries. We have a duty to destroy them. And the way we would do that, we would take a position in the international stock markets and commodities, and we would hire mercenaries, and we would cause a panic. And al-Qaeda are hired mercenaries.
I agree with that.
All right? I don't say that al-Qaeda doesn't exist, but remember what bin Laden said at the beginning of this interview. He said, we have three independent networks to move our assets around. It's a cowboy outfit. You know, they can wield a box cutter, maybe an AK-47, set up a little explosive. But 9/11 was a brilliantly coordinated military project. Remember, there were three crime scenes including buildings 1 and 2, which we saw because the planes hit them. But building 7 is part of the 9/11 scenario. On floors 11, 12, and 13 were the offices of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and all the investigations into the dot-com scandals, including WorldCom, run by Citigroup, and for which Citigroup has paid $3.4 billion, was vaporized, George.
All the records gone.
Gone, right? The chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, Arthur Levitt, he resigned in May 2001. He became senior advisor to the Carlyle Group. The following year, he became the overseer of the Teachers National Pension Fund.
So your theory is that this fund hires Al-Qaeda, masterminds this incredible act, and it's all for a scam to make money.
No, there are two objectives, George. Going back to the arbitraged event, if you recollect, the New York Stock Exchange closed down for 4 days.
Right.
But the Chicago Mercantile Exchange on the futures market continued running.
Why is that?
Now, the reason they wanted the New York Stock Exchange to close down is when you are arbitraging, for example, and you're long in New York and you're short in Chicago Mercantile Exchange, what that means is you've got a lot of Enron stock on your hands and you need to crash the stock and sell it short. But you can only make money if the traders in New York have stopped trading, because as soon as they see that arbitrage gap grow,
I see.
They get into it, right?
I see.
And the only way you can make serious arbitrage profits in a dot-com bubble market, because they all knew that Enron and Dynergy and Quest and WorldCom and Tyco were about to burst, is to shut down the New York Stock Exchange. So they needed, and my phrase is, to manufacture a shock in New York.
Absolutely.
And make their
incredible profits
in Chicago.
And I assume they did make those profits?
Oh, totally. And the guys who made the profits, the guys who made the biggest profits, were CAI, which I think is an anagram for CIA, but I'll come back to that. The CAI Private Equity Group, which manages and invests the Teachers National Pension Fund on behalf of senior faculty members across America.
Why is it that the Securities and Exchange Commission never revealed to us who made those short sales of insurance companies and airlines that day as well?
Now, we're moving on to the third network. Remember I mentioned three networks, or mm-hmm. Osama bin Laden mentioned three networks. The first network, I believe, is the financial network, which is the Teachers Private Equity Group. The second network is the NATO command and control system that I believe was to use to control the military assets. And I can guarantee that. The third asset is the mob. Now, very interesting. You remember I mentioned this company, AMEC, that got the job for testing the saboteur types that
yes.
would be most successful.
Who paid them for this, by the way?
I think the Teachers Private Equity Group.
Okay.
I think they were retained privately.
All right.
As was Boeing. When they come to the scene of the crime afterwards, guess who gets the contract, George, to clean up?
The mob.
AMEC. Right? And the first guy on the scene.
And they clean it up pretty fast, too, don't they?
Yes, because three groups of people showed up the day of or the day after. And you'd think there'd be the yellow tapes around. It would be scene of crime. It wasn't. Teamsters Local 813, which was the New York Sanitation Department, showed up and turned the hoses on and started flushing the body bits into the sewers. Waste Management Incorporated got to operate the meshes to see which body parts would go through. Well, that is a George Soros investment. And it turns out that AMEC employed a reputed boss of the Lucchese crime family to take it out to Fresh Kills landfill.
Okay, now let's step back just a little bit, David, because it is well known that we were aware that these fundamentalists were training, were trying to get their pilot's license, were trying to get schooled in flight. We know that bin Laden had a hatred for the United States, that he was financing terror. All that was real. All
yes.
that happened, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay. But look at the flying skills of these guys. The instructors said they can barely fly a Cessna.
True.
Right? These guys, Hani Hanjour, who is allegedly in Flight 77, he executed a 270-degree pivoted turn from 7,000 feet to ground zero, about 10 feet above the Pentagon lawn, 540 miles an hour, in 2.5 minutes, and he went through the first floor window, and it wasn't wedge one under construction. Guess what was the other side? It was the U.S. Naval Command Center, George.
That's strange. Okay, why mastermind the other two hijackings, the reported one that hit the Pentagon, and then the crash in the Pennsylvania, a plane that they thought was going to go for the White House or the Capitol?
Okay, that was going to hit the Capitol, and it would have decapitated the American administration, because Flight 93, which is the one that allegedly came down in the field outside Shanksylvania, was 41 minutes late, George. Had it left on time, it would have been over Washington at exactly the same moment as Flight 77.
All right, were those two diversions to take away from the World Trade Center financial hit?
No. The World Trade Center was primarily iconic to destroy American capitalism and make that money, you know, with
make the
with,
money
with,
doing
make
it.
Make the money. The Pentagon and the Capitol, these were the political objectives.
So this group was truly out to destroy America.
Yes, it was. And remember what Maurice Strong said, and I believe Maurice Strong is one of the 50 people in the Teachers Private Equity Group. He said, America represents the greatest threat to the survival of the planet. Actually, he said the rich industrialized countries. We will take a position in the international stock markets. We will hire mercenaries. We will cause a panic, and we will jam open the market.
Where did he say this?
He said it in 1991 to a Western Star reporter about a story that he would like to write, right? Unfortunately, this clown went on to become the architect of the U.S., the United Nations oil for food scam.
Why isn't our government publicly investigating this, other than the push for terrorism and the chase of Al-Qaeda?
They've half gone after him because they've indicted a guy called Tong Sung Park, who is the colleague of Maurice Strong, who carried a million-dollar bribe from Saddam Hussein in Baghdad via the man in Jordan. It was wired through to New York, and it was sent up to Canada, and it was invested in the then finance minister of Canada's Canada Steamship Lines. And I believe Maurice Strong bought Saddam Hussein a ticket for the 9-1-1 war games.
Well, why are we not publicizing it? Why are we merely talking about the war on terror when there may be a bigger problem here?
Because I can't get through to the people who matter. But tonight is a big night for me, George. And because I've got through to you, and I think because we've got a lot of listeners, I believe and I hope and I pray that the research and discoveries that I've made, I think now will have some momentum.
Well, David, I have always said that when anything happens, follow the money, see
exactly.
Who profits.
Exactly.
And in this particular case, I've always wondered, and I've said on this program before, that there is no doubt in my mind that Al-Qaeda was part of this. I mean, a lot of people will claim that they were not. Truly, they were. The evidence is there that they tried. But I've always said that bin Laden was a hired hitman.
Yes. Can I mention the gyroscopes, if we've got time?
Sure.
Okay. Boeing has recently, I believe this year, paid the largest corporate fine in history, $615 million.
For what?
To get the U.S. Department of Justice to drop its investigations into about 14 years of illegal modifications and procurement fraud. All right. One of those modifications, which is absolutely germane to the events of 9-1-1, is the installation of a gyro chip in the avionics of Boeing 737s. And the gyro chip is a military gyroscope that is also used, for example, in Raytheon's Maverick missile. Now, here's what I think happened with Flight 11. Well, let's take Flight 77 because it's more spectacular. When the group of planes involved in the NORAD war games got over the Pentagon or Washington, D.C., the United States Air Force base commanders believed they had control of those decoy hijackers through the gyro chip inside the avionics and Boeing's military satellite communication systems. I believe those gyro chips and the avionics had been backdoored, so they could actually block out the United States Air Force base commanders, and the planes could then be flown around the gyroscope, just like a missile, into the first floor of the Pentagon, where it killed Captain Gerald DeConto, who was the duty officer for the U.S. Navy Command Center.
So you believe a plane indeed hit the Pentagon?
Absolutely.
Not a missile?
Absolutely. But it looked like a passenger plane, right?
Right.
And it may have been part of a convoy where there was a decoy hijacker in front, etc. Because with the Boeing satellite communication system, they could patch in voices from three or four different planes and present it as a single voice log, if you see what I mean.
Well, what happened to the occupants of what was supposed to have been that flight?
I think they were in it, probably. I think they were in it.
All right.
But the plane had been modified, unbeknown, quite possibly, to Hani Hanjour, who was flying the plane. Because I think Hani Hanjour, there were two kinds of hijackers. You remember you mentioned Ramzi Youssef?
Yes.
In the 1993? Ramzi Youssef was what was described as an expert terrorist, and
right.
the other guys were the expendables.
Yes,
right?
No doubt.
On those hijackings, there was an expert or a semi-expert who knew the language of flying, etc., but the muscle hijackers who wielded the box cutters, they didn't even speak English. They were parachuted in from Saudi Arabia.
I've always thought that other than the pilots, if there were pilots now, that the rest of the hijackers probably didn't think they were going to be dead. They probably thought something else was going to happen.
I think it's the other way around. I think the expert hijacker, the Mohammed Atta, believed he was testing this electronic hijacking system, right, and pretending to be a hijacker. I don't think he knew that the muscle hijackers in the first class compartment had the box cutters, and I think they killed him as well. And then the plane, instead of crashing arbitrarily, was being flown remotely through the Boeing Iridium satellite communication system and the gyro chip installed inside the avionics.
What an incredible theory, David. Absolutely.
And that's how
incredible.
You get the trajectory of the plane, which was way beyond the talents of the abilities of the people who were sitting in the cockpit.
How long was this thing planned?
I think it started before the 1993 attack. I think the people who carried out the 1993 attack carried out 9/11. And I think you've got three networks inside the United States, which Al-Qaeda was using back in 1989-1990. Let me just give you a quick insight into what Al-Qaeda is. Al-Qaeda is the name the CIA has given to its database of special weapons and tactics teams operating in the Middle East. Al-Qaeda in Arabic means base in English. And that database appears to have been stolen in 1995 or 1996 by the then director of the CIA, John Deutsch, who was pardoned by President Clinton on the 31st of January of 2001. And John Deutsch is the professor of chemistry at MIT, and he's an expert on explosive hydrodynamics, which happens to be my area of expertise as well. And what you can do, George, with explosive hydrodynamics is you can hit a solid object like a steel girder or a human body with a shock wave traveling at five times the speed of sound at a temperature of around 5,500 degrees, and it turns into a plasma.
And down it goes.
And down it goes. And there is no evidence of murder and arson and fraud down in the debris pile of Building 1, 2, and 7. And if there is any remaining pieces, the Lucchese crime family and the Teamsters and Waste Management Inc. will take it out and put it under Garbage Hills 1 and 9 of the Fresh Kills landfill on Staten Island. They'll flog the steel or what remains of the steel to Indian and Chinese smelters. And they'll recycle it, and they'll share the profits amongst the mob.
My God, David, what a theory. What a theory. Well, thank you for sharing that.
It's a pleasure, John.
And that is a different perspective than anything we've heard. I'll be back in a moment because we still have another theory on Coast to Coast AM.